So welcome back. This is Cellular Wisdom Decoded, our second hour on August 23rd, 2020. And Linda, where would you like to start?
I'm going to put that up that the nine elements, and I want to jump to the last two. Before I do, I want to emphasize again the pause and how important that pause is. And that pause between the tea touches, where we actually stay present. And I wonder if anyone has any feedback about that, because the longer I do this work, the more it's been quite a while now. I've realized how important that staying present in the pause is, staying right here. And I just wonder if anybody has any experience with that, that you would, let's just take one person who'd like to share that.
May I say something, Linda?
Please, Teresa Cazzarelli.
When I make the pause, when I explain it, I tell the people it's like on the computer, when you push the button enter. And it's very, let's say it's funny, but it enters and it stays
interesting.
There.
Interesting. Yes, it's like, and that in the pause, for me, that's when we connect to this code. We connect to that creative spark, the creation of the universe, the cellular wisdom. That's that pause gives us that presence there. Perhaps, Yale, that's what you were feeling at that point. Thank you, Teresa. Let's just put this up, Sandy, because one of the things I'm going to suggest to you in these next weeks, before the next time, is that you go to this last element, the feedback, and that if you have an opportunity to work with someone else, your family or however you're working, this one of the things that we do with T-Touch is give the responsibility of the person being T-Touched to give a sense of what pressure they would like and what tempo. And depending if this is a client you're working with, one of the simple ways is just to say, so when we're explaining, like, so this is a what I would call you don't have to say what the pressure is. You just say, so would you like me to use here a little more pressure or a little less? And then allow that. And now much of the time you'll get, I like it the way it is. Or maybe they want to explore, to feel, what would a little more be like, or what would a little less be like? And by giving the person the responsibility of feedback rather than the practitioner, because in every normal method of therapy, the therapist is expected to know what's right for that person. And this is giving this, what we call an empowerment feedback scale. And we've had a lot of experience with this, having the person suddenly realize, I thought I wanted more, but actually I like it the way it was, or I'd like to even try a little bit less. And in this way, opening the possibility for people to feel themselves in a new way. And the same thing, would you like me to go a little faster in the circle or a little slower? And again, giving them that possibility. It's very different if you're a therapist who has learned to, you know what's right for the person. But this is a different concept of giving a person an opportunity to guide you up to what they might like to experience in another way on their body. Now, the eighth element, or actually, let's see if there are any comments or questions before I move on from that.
It's also asking yourself for that feedback. I just wanted to add that.
No, go there, Sandy, because I was just talking about working on someone else. So, right. Elizabeth. Elizabeth,
we
forgot. This is your
chance.
I was going to say.
So, as Moshe would say, there aren't silly questions, only silly answers, but I have a silly question. So I've been working on people doing the T-Touch and playing with it a little bit because it's new for me. So say if I'm working on someone's finger, okay? Obviously 6 o'clock is in this direction if their finger's oriented this way. But if I'm holding their finger this way, does 6 o'clock become this way? That's my question is, where's 6 o'clock? So if the finger's horizontal, 6 o'clock, I would bring the tissues down to 6 o'clock and go 1 1/4 circles. But if the finger is, if their hand is, you know, on the table, right? Lying down,
yes,
or whatever. Right. 6 o'clock then is this way, right? Down and around 1 1/4 circles. So my question is, do you keep 6 o'clock consistent in the body part, for example, in a, like anatomical position, or is it wherever your reference is that becomes 6 o'clock? So you were showing us here on your arm, I'm assuming this direction is 6 o'clock. But if the arm is this way, then this direction is 6 o'clock. And does it matter?
Well, the thing is, I think it does matter to the person being T-touched. And as you said, Elizabeth, my reference is anatomically, that would be ideal. However, if the person is lying on their side, for instance, let's say my side of my arm, if I go toward the elbow, that's one feeling. And if I go, just try it on your own arm. On my arm. It's not so comfortable for me if I have the 6 o'clock toward the ground, in this case on the arm, just because of the way the body is aligned, everything in the body. So I will, in principle, I go with the anatomical connection of where you would be.
So then yes. 6 o'clock would be in the direction of the wrist.
Correct.
So even when you're holding their arm sideways, 6 o'clock is in the direction of the wrist and you start the circle there.
Yes.
Okay, so it's
unless you get a feeling, wait a minute, now how would that be? Like just when I'm making this movement here, it would be logical to have 6 o'clock toward the ground on your on my arm. That's logical. Okay. But when I do that, everything stops here, but when I imagine my 6 o'clock as though I were in the upright position, I can feel a connection all the way up into my back.
Okay.
But when I feel a 6 o'clock toward the ground, it stops here.
Okay. So like for fingers then, 6 o'clock is always oriented towards the fingernail and toes as well.
And that's what would be logical.
Okay.
And this is where I like on the fingers, this is one of the movements we do. I like to ask people, do they prefer the lift toward the heavens?
Right.
Just try it yourself, please, everyone. Just, that's one feeling, isn't it? Another is if I go toward the hand. Completely different, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I prefer on my finger the lift upward.
So even if you're so then
but six that doesn't mean that you would prefer that.
Okay.
I'm interested to know because that's a little too much, maybe in the direction of the hand. Now there's another possibility, and that is I make my circle in a quarter and the thumb stays still and just contains, and now I'm going to with both fingers circle and a quarter with the forefinger, and then push a little together.
Hmm.
That's another feeling. Which do I prefer? Totally different. The three completely different things.
And this is where the empowerment scale really comes in, where you ask the person, how does this feel and how does this feel? But in general, yeah, even Moshe would talk about how does an astronaut know where he is when he's in outer space? He doesn't know where the sun is and the ground is. He knows his head is always here, or his head is always here, and his feet are always there. So it's in relation to your body, right? And then maybe yes and maybe no, like you're saying with the fingers.
What's more comfortable?
Ask the person.
So it's a basic question. It's a really basic question. I find when I have a person lying on their side that the two perspectives have a completely different effect on the body. And that's where I like to ask, just do both. And is one more interesting than the other? Maybe not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the question. It's a really important, not a silly question at all.
Thank
actually,
you.
Like we don't have any silly questions, right?
In my practice in Massachusetts in Feldenkrais for 40 years or so, I've been talking to people about learn to be their own comfort detective and to give me feedback and to not go to a dentist if that person doesn't practice nicely, in, as a way of feeling to them, or anybody to be really picky about who they choose to touch them. And and people, it's like a big learning for many of us, right? To begin to be my own inner authority, as Moshe said, and to feel what is nice for me. It's still an ongoing learning in my experience.
Victoria, thank you for that feedback, because many, many people don't haven't necessarily had the question asked what they prefer.
Right, exactly.
In their whole lives. Actually.
Sadly.
Yes. And this is an opportunity. Thank you. So just looking again, just before we move on, because we're about to move on, but I want you to look at the eight of the nine elements, the eighth element. And that is, if we can see it, if somebody could read it, because I can't read it. It's so small on my... Sandy, can you read it?
Yep.
It's the intention.
Yeah.
The intention. Mm-hmm. And the intention here, when we're working with somebody or myself, the message is, and this is a basic part of T-Touch. And that is the message to remember your perfection, meaning at the cellular level. That's the caveat. Remember your perfection at the cellular level. And those were words that came to me the first time I ever got this idea of looking at the body from the place of cells. It was in the after the first year of my Feldenkrais training, and Moshe had given us the recommendation to read the book Man on His Nature by Sir Charles Sherrington. And Sherrington was a Nobel Prize recipient. And he, in his chapter on the body wisdom, he wrote with such passion the concept that every cell in the body knows its function in the body. And he gave the example of when you get a little cut on your hand and everything that goes to heal that. Just, it's a wonder. And I got that sense of wonder. And it was in that moment when I thought, wow, when I don't yet know how to do the amazing miracles that we had seen Moshe do in 20 minutes to the person, changes that were unimaginable, because we didn't yet know how to do them. I thought, all I have to do, and I looked at my fingers and I just thought, all I have to do is remind these cells not just to give this body the message of its potential for ideal function. Just remember your perfection. And that, this factor, remember your perfection, when I work with someone, that's the message. And Amy, that's the message with your friends who don't yet, aren't open yet to this possibility that you found. Just remember their perfection. And when we honor that in each other and we see that, and if I'm working with somebody with fourth stage cancer, they're looking like they're ready to leave, I can't necessarily say that. Or if somebody's in intense pain and cannot take painkillers, which I've worked with people who, after surgery, where that's been the case. What I can't say that to them necessarily, but I can say, remember your potential for ideal function at the cellular level. And then we start talking about that. And when I guide them into this basic concept that, wow, this wow factor that every cell in the body knows its function is the body, and that we are a collection of miracles. and get us excited about this. Not 100 trillion cells. Now, that's what the number that's used by Bruce Lipton primarily in the books, how many cells the average person has. And every one of them knowing its function in the body and having communication and run by this, as we recognize now, this divine spark in every cell in the body, this creative spark. That's who we are. So that's what keeps me like this excited and about sharing this work. And this 1 1/4 basic circle, which is like the golden ratio, this 1 1/4 circle nature in all of nature, this spiral is like a way in. It's like a connector to that creative energies of the universe, that cellular wisdom that Joan King describes as the communication or intercommunication. So with that, what we have in mind is you had an experience. Oh, wait, I just want to throw up on the screen the tea touches and the pictures, because a couple of you have said to me how much that helped you. So we have a collection of approximately 20, more than 20 now, different parts of the hand that we have identified with animal names. They're mostly animals that I've worked on. And all it gives you an idea of ways that we can talk with each other, which part of the hand that we're using, you know, to work on ourselves or on someone else. And what is important, when I started doing that in the 80s, I did it because we had like 5 different hand positions, the basic, what we now call the clouded leopard, the lying leopard, the raccoon touches. We had numbers 1 to 5, but then we kept finding other parts of the hand we could use. And then I realized, now we have to give them animal names. And when we did, what I didn't realize is how important it is that when we connect with that part, that's like the clouded leopard and that little leopard I worked on the LA zoo, a clouded leopard. And I used that part of my fingers, these pads of my fingers, like 2/3 of the pads. And that's, so we call that, and that's the greatest awareness. And when that little leopard relaxed and stretched out the front legs, that's what I call the lying leopard, when we use the underside of the fingers. And that's such a nice thing if we just focus on a couple of these touches. And then the python lift. Just touch your arm.
Can you move your screen, your thing down? So
you
can
see you. Yeah. Wait.
Oh, your computer. Sorry. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Thank you. So, and this python lift that is in my book, Penguin paperback book, showing this lift on this on this python at the San Diego Zoo Park that had reoccurring pneumonia, and penicillin and the antibiotics weren't working. Doing the lips on that snake is what allowed her to not go into pneumonia each spring. Just this. So circle and a quarter is the coils. Lift is the python. The python lift upward. Brilliant way to stop spasming, as I said before. Can you put that up, the screen share?
May I ask, when you lift on the python, did you lift towards the head or towards the heavens?
Thank you. What do you think?
It's Amy.
I know. What do you think?
I would think the heavens.
Well, it would be logical. Yes, toward the heaven. Exactly. Yep. Toward the heaven. That just lifts. Now, is there a way to make this big that they can see this? I am seeing this just as a tiny picture. I don't know.
I can make it big, but when I make it big, you won't be able to see the entire thing all at the same time. So,
which I can't now. Okay, yeah, just
so when I make it there, yeah, you can just see parts of things.
So what these are, and this is in our membership site, right?
Yes.
And it's fun to just see the animals and to see a picture of the animals and the name, and then know which part of the hand that is. And Sandy and Gary in Wisconsin, that bear touch is really for you all. Because actually that came from a 6-month-old bear that we rehabbed because he'd been hit by a car. And during the Mount St. Helens eruption and had neurological damage, and we rehabbed him with T-Touch. And that's where the bear touch came in. So just to give you a sense, we won't go over all of those right now because we want to go on. But I want us, you see, each one of these has a story. The llama and that elephant seal, that's the part of the thumb that I use. And I got that for my knee, and it's really useful around knees. And I lay beside an elephant seal on the beach north of Santa Cruz. And that just reminded me, you see the thumb, that's like their funny nose and their big body is the thumb. And so why it's important now, it seems, that one of the things we're dealing with in this, in our society, the way we are, is what's called a nature deficit syndrome. And when we imagine all these different parts of the hand as representing these different animals, we're bringing nature, we're connecting with nature in another way. And we're bringing the spirit of the animals into your hands with you. And we're connecting with this all that is. And just some magic starts to happen when we begin to do this. So let's just hold our hands up. And one of the things, when you hold your hands up together like this, some of you maybe remember in Sunday school, we did this little thing, you know, here's the church and there's the steeple. I don't remember it, but it was something like this. But so we're putting your fingers together like this, and that part of the pads that connect, that is the clouded leopard touch. And then when we take the underside of the hands, like that, that's the lying leopard. And that's a really soothing, really wonderful soothing connection to do the circles. And when we put the whole hand on, which I can't do on my arm, I can do on my chest like this, and I cup my hand. Don't flatten it. If you flatten your hand, actually flatten your hand and feel what that's like. I can feel my abdominal muscles tighten. And now my back muscles just released when I soften my hand. And this is the abalone. Put your hand Now, on, just imagine this abalone is this shell, and underneath is this muscle in the abalone. But left here in this place, I'd like you to consider putting this on your heart and filling this hand with your heart. And just think, when we do this abalone, we're putting our heart in our hands, and then we can put our hands on ourselves with heart, or on an animal. That's where it started. Yeah. Put your heart in your hand, and yeah, put your hand on your animal. But we can put our hands on ourselves with heart also. Interesting. Okay, now, chick, when we go to the tips of the fingers. There's clouded leopard. Now tip your fingers up without the fingernails, the very tips of the fingers. And that's one of Eleanor's favorite touches that you're going to be talking about, I'm sure, is the raccoon touch. The very tips of the fingers. And then straight up, perpendicular, this first connection, first joint segment. That's bear touch, bear claw. That's the bear claws. Your claws are on. And now, yick, when I separate them, that's a tiger touch. Same as bear with claws, with nails. And boy, sometimes that's really interesting to get in straight in gentle ways. It works better through clothes because all the work that we do is through clothes, just like the Feldenkrais work, of course. Now, look at my fingers. Just put your fingers together like this. The back, the fingernails like this, the back of the nails. That is the baby chimp. And the chimp is between, and the reason I named it that is because I worked on chimps in Zambia, actually in the wild. I mean, they were tame, but we took them out in the forest every day just to be free. The chimp, and that's how they pull their fingers up when they walk. They curl their fingers. So the chimp is like, I could use from the first to the second joint. That's the chimp touch. For some people, it's really interesting. It's interesting with the heart hug. I have the fingers pulled up. Now, in the neck area here, working on your own neck or someone else's neck, oh, this is nice. That's the baby orang from the tip to the second joint. And it fits right there nicely. That way. And now the orang, on humans, where would I use it? I don't know. Do I use this on humans? No, it's mostly horses. Mostly horses. I can't think right now where I would use it. Probably not. And then the back of the hand, that is the llama touch. And that's got a whole story. So just the back of the hand, it's very non-invasive and soft. And then we have these parts like the side, right here, between the where the hand joins on and the fingers join. When I curve that, that soft part, that's the banana slug. And I'd love to have, here's where some of you use that banana slug. Why it's important to have the curve, if I straighten that, now do it. Ah, this is hard. It's no nice, soft, squishy slug. I have to soften that. This is really a nice thing to use on yourself in some places. And we've got other parts. This is the elephant foot. Sometimes I can use that, right? For my heart hug, actually, sometimes. And there are other parts, you know, like I find I use this together like that, sometimes on my back and sometimes round, which is called the owl, sometimes the blowfish, but it's only when you're in Hawaii. That's really useful for places if you're dealing with nerve pain. It's really helpful. So those are, just play with that. And, you know, when you're not teaching, when you, if you're going to teach this work, which is why we have all these names, then you need to know the names. But just use your hands and explore. Ah, that's interesting. And if you think, what animal could that be? And just connect with that animal. Something else happens to us. We go beyond ourselves and connect with nature in another way. So, any comments or questions about this before we go on now? And I want Eleanor to tell a story.
Jean has a question. Sorry, yes. Hang on a second, Nancy. Jean had a question about asking what determines which technique is used and when and where.
Okay. And who asked?
Jean Stoner.
Okay. So who would like to answer, Jean? We've got lots of people who use it. Just where, how would you determine that? So the way I came up with it, with these different things, is just finding ways to work on parts of the body that were comfortable and simply following just my sense. Wait a minute, what part of the hand could I use here that would fit in this particular spot? And if you just use like the tips and the raccoon touch and the lying leopard and combine it with the lift, if you only did those few, you'll find a big difference. Don't worry about all the different ones in the beginning. Explore different ways to use your hands to make the circle and a quarter, depending upon where you are. It's what's comfortable for your hands. It's what fits comfortably for the other person. And one of the ways to explore is just to look at these different parts, play around with it on yourself, and see what is of interest. Most of us use only 2 or 3 touches, you know, basically clouded or leopard or raccoon touch. And when you get into spaces, like places around the face, fingers aren't so good. This is where you can turn it over and use different parts. Sometimes I'll use the fingers, but sometimes, wait a minute, I can use, depending upon what I find helpful and interesting. Explore the possibilities. And if you only want to choose a couple of them, that's enough. Don't worry about it. Yes.
Kathy Wright asked, when you use your fingers flat, what do you do with your thumb?
Good question. Oh. Is when in this, depending like on the arm, if I keep my thumb free and make the circle and a quarter and like do a coiled python without the thumb, it's very different than if I just make a connection with my thumb and keep that connection. Try both ways and you'll know what works for you. Most of the time, making that connection, there's a completion that happens that's very different. Did you try it and see like what works for you?
Yes, when you first showed it, I couldn't see what was happening with your thumb, and that was my tendency to put my thumb, I can't get my
somewhere.
Thumb. God.
You know, and when the hand was flat.
Yeah. But
But anyway.
You can do it both ways. It can put it around, or you can put it beside, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And you could also really make the connection with that lift, which I just did that. I hadn't done that before. And I find that's different. And it feels really interesting and very different. You feel it?
Yeah, and I use it a lot. I've been changing the position on my shoulder and what part of the hand I use, because that's where challenge is at.
Nice.
Feels good. I'm not tall enough.
Making that connection with the thumb to finish it as you kind of come together is interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Also, on this whole area, this whole rotator cuff area, this is where I remember a 20-minute session, maybe even 30, that I did with the raccoon touches around somebody's shoulder. And I can't remember what the issue was, but I just stayed there. Can you see how I'm moving? Mm-hmm. Just try this on your own arm. See, I'm not picking. This is, by the way, one of the connectors in the nine elements is like, how do I connect to the next circle? Do I let go and jump, or do I walk to the next one? Both work, but it's much more interesting to me to like walk over, make that connection. I have to stay more connected, more present. And at the end of this session, and I think it was a 30-minute session, all I did were these tiny, tiny little circles. Probably this is before we had the pressures, but I would say it was probably with a two or three, not more, because this person had a lot of pain around here. And the whole, the fluidity and the movement was completely different. And that might be something for you just to experiment on yourself. Even do 5 minutes like that. Differentiating these different areas. Ooh, but I'm... Who's our call-in user, by the way? Could you find that out, please? Is that...
And Linda, Nancy Addison Helmers has her hand up. She's had it up for a while, so I'm lowering your hand and you can unmute yourself.
Okay. Hi. So Linda, I was doing the banana slug on Linda in this the lower back.
Yep.
And it was feeling really good. And I put my left hand on her left thigh.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really my thumb. You know,
that's your connector.
Okay. That was my question, because it felt good and it felt right.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a different way of connecting when, in that case, you were just doing it, right? That's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
I thought I saw somebody else just raise their hand. Did someone else just raise their hand and did I lose it?
Christine has her hand raised.
Oh, I'll find you and you can lower your hand. Oh, hi, Christine. Hi. There we go. And you can unmute yourself.
Okay. Yes, well, this, I just wanted to make a comment. Some of it goes back a little ways, but the idea, I think, is to become familiar with all the different touches. And then you have a reservoir from which to choose, but not like necessarily consciously, but intuitively. And as you get in tune and present with the person, whether it's yourself or somebody else or, you know, an animal, then you intuitively will know which one to do. And the other thing I wanted to comment on was the one of the reasons I really love this, and I've done a bunch of other healing modalities, as I've said before, but the fact that the person you're working on doesn't have to depend upon you. They don't have to go to you for continuing sessions, because you can so easily teach them the basic concept. And that's what I love about it, because that means they can take responsibility for it themselves. And so just like when you were saying to ask the person what felt best, instead of assuming that you as the practitioner slash healer, whatever, know what's best, that's sort of an old modality, an old paradigm, I think. So this way, you're teaching the person that they actually have the power to feel what does work best when they're having the practitioner work on them, but then they can, when they get past the crisis or whatever, especially if it's something chronic, they have the power to do it to themselves. And that's what I love about this. And yes. And also the fact, of course, that it's related to animal, the connection with animal nature. To me, that's primary. Okay, that's all I had to say.
Thank you. And
I shut my camera. Yeah, I was having computer troubles, and somehow I had to figure out, and I shut my camera off because I was using too much power. I've got a computer issue. Oh, so.
No worries.
I'm finished now.
So, well, so one of the wonderful things that Eleanor has found over all these years as a Feldenkrais practitioner is the fact that between her sessions, she can give people something they can do. And so, Eleanor, I would really love it. Now it's your turn, and we've taken it's your turn. And Eleanor has a really wonderful story that she wants to share with this. And then I'm going to ask you to also share the one about the heart hug situation, but let's start with this. And if there's more, because it was your desire to make really sure that they had clarity in a couple of tea touches to take away for those of you who are basically new, and just know, yes, over a period of time, you can explore all these different ways, but with having a few basics like the lift with the coil first, just to bring awareness, and then the lift and the raccoon touches, etc. Eleanor Silverstein.
You're muted, Eleanor.
Thank you. I could talk to myself for hours. one benefit of COVID, you're never lonely. So I have been working doing this kind of way of working with people for several years with the gut and with all the organs and the enteric nervous system and connecting to the central nervous system. And it just happened to be a local practitioner who's a Feldenkrais practitioner who's a good friend of mine. We've become good friends as Feldenkrais practitioners. Has attended many of my classes where I teach the tea touches, the lightness of the touch. And always my inclination and favorite, if that's the way to say it, way of touching is very light and very gentle with very clear intention. And in the depths of communication. And she had been a few weeks ago very, very ill, very, very ill. She doesn't know what it was. She thinks she got food poisoning, but it didn't go away. And she had been throwing up for over a week and the pain in her abdomen was excruciating. Out of a 1 to 10, she would say all night long it would be an 11. And she contacted her doctor, her internist, and the location of it was the lower right quadrant. That's where it was most of the time. And her internist said that if this lasts 2 more hours, you need to get to the emergency room because likely it's an appendicitis attack. And yeah, I see Jewel nodding her head. So it's like, you know, and you never know, it can go into the mesentery tissue. It can create, you know, infection everywhere. And it's quite deadly and dangerous and deadly. And so, and I was very concerned and I reached out to her and I said, do you want to come to me? And at the same time, she was reaching out saying, can I come to you? So I just cleared my schedule. It was my first time during the lockdown that I'm like, yes, come on over. And she laid down on my Feldenkrais table. I've given her lessons before, so she knows my light touch. She's been to my classes. She knows this beautiful work that we do. And all I did is I tend to use the raccoon touch right here. If you can see just on this part, right? So just on the tips, you know, not to the bear, but to the tips of the fingers for those who are just listening. And I use all of the fingers. So the thumb is together with it. So it, I'm going to see if I can do this because I invite you to experience this with me as I describe it. So apologize for the video that I will be cutting my head off, but at least, oh, I should have worn a more simple shirt. Okay, but so I just used, do you see, I'm using all 10 and I'm using thumbs. And all I did was just follow around her organs. Now, I happen to know very well where all the organs are. I know where the intestines are. I know where the descending and transverse, I know where all of those parts of the colon are. I know where the pancreas and spleen are. So I only just went through following where her organs were and just listened. I did not do anything. I was only listening. And so when I got to the lower right quadrant, usually when I'm just listening, it moves me in a little bit of a quarter of a circle clockwise movement. And this kept going counterclockwise. And no, I didn't think of Chinese medicine. I didn't think energy. I just listened. No attitude, no opinions, just observation. And so you can follow along your own gut and you don't have to know where anything is. Just listen quietly and you can take your time just to listen if you feel that in some areas it may really move the pads of your fingers in one direction. And there may be other areas where it doesn't move at all, or it's quiet, or maybe it moves in the counterclockwise position. In the lower right quadrant, it was an unusual kind of listening there because it kept whooshing me over counterclockwise. And so I just asked the question, is this the valve? Is this the valve where the small intestine meets the large intestine? Because she had been vomiting. She was not pooping at all for days, only vomiting everything. And so, and she was vomiting bile. I mean, it just kept coming, kept coming. So now mind you, I have never really listened to the appendix. I did not make judgment. I am not an expert in appendicitis. I didn't know. And I just left that possibility open. Is it the appendix? I don't know. So I am not a a medical practitioner, I just listen with my hands. And then all of a sudden in the listening, it started to go quarter of a circle clockwise. It just became softer, like all the other areas. And she took in a deep breath and says, oh, the pain just quieted down to like a one or a two, from an 11 to a one or a two. And we just stayed.
Main pain level, one pain level.
Pain level that had sometimes go sharp at an 11, but hovered at 7 and 8 all the time and went down to 1 and 2. The touch was, you know how Linda talked about earlier, the, you know how we start at 1 and level 1, 2, 3, okay. And then she mentioned a half, like the weight of a butterfly. So the level that I touched along the organs was like that of a half, between a half and 1. That way I'm not pushing my opinion or any of my human thought processes to it. I'm purely listening to what her body is doing. And it's amazing how eventually her body started to recognize communication and reorganized itself. Now, teaching her, because she's come to the classes, she had tried doing the touch on herself and she was able to quiet it down, but she needed help. So coming to me was the piece that got it over the edge. She went home with her little satchel of goodies in her mind, touch like this, touch like this. So she had tools to work with. So when the pain would start to crop up again, she went back down. And meanwhile, she stayed in connection, in contact with her doctor. Because when she came to my home studio, she was on her way to the ER. And she stayed in contact, texting with her doctor. It all quieted down. Her doctor said, okay, if that's the case, go back home. If it goes back up to a level 8, go to the hospital. It never did. It completely quieted down. And by the way, guess what happened that night? She pooped and pooped and pooped and pooped. You know what happened? She had an impaction. From all the vomiting from the food poisoning, all the spasticity of the colon got stuck. It really was around the ileocecal valve. Now, mind you, it doesn't mean it wasn't the appendix. We don't know. We just know everything in her systems quieted down. She came back one more time and we talk and she's like, it does little waves of a one or a two in the level of discomfort. And she goes, but that's it, I'm good. It's just, I needed to really poop. And so the poop came out, she said it was like so much poop, and then she was good. So that's part of what this light touch does. And you can do this on your own, just following the lightness of the listening of that raccoon touch. Don't be aware to not float the thumb up. Let the thumb touch, right? So let the thumb touch you and listen. And just listen to follow the level of the organs. And the lighter the touch, the more you're working with the enteric nervous system. The more it's not a deep tissue massage where you're telling it what to do or highly suggesting for what to do, but you're communicating to the nervous system of the gut and it re-regulates itself. And that's what this level of light touch does. Now, it doesn't mean that there isn't such thing as deep tissue with the gut. There's beautiful work that is deep. It's just my way of working. My preference is I like to work on the neurological level to let it balance itself. And here was a beautiful example of what it did. And she's good. And she said, you know what? I didn't have to spend $600 because she says, if I went to the ER, it would have cost me $600 out of my what's that called with the insurance? What's it called?
Copay.
Copay. She goes, I would have had to pay. So she goes, oh my God. So the next day, arrived at my front door, this huge bouquet of flowers. She goes, so that was so sweet because it was just me giving it to her to help her. I wanted my friend to be better. So
beautiful, beautiful, Eleanor.
Yeah, thank
you. And this is where the tendency is to go deep, and the fact that you can reach in. And what I might ask you, I would surmise when we do that light touch, what I do is imagine that that's going where it needs to go. It's almost like what I imagine here. I'm touching this area, and wherever that communication needs to go, it knows and it goes there. We don't have to take it in with deep touch. And that, I mean, think of what was released just by that lightness.
Well, and you know that with T-Touch, it's like we're taking into consideration the communication. And for me, when I'm working in the abdominal communication area, I'm actually asking it to communicate to me. So I'm only listening. On rare occasion do I say, hey, I have an idea, how about this? And I'll actually do, right? You know, so I take the raccoon touch and I'll actually give a little bit of a turn to it to communicate, this is what you can do. But in the listening, wow, you'd be amazed what it can take back to do on its own.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And see that Amy has a hand up. Oh, I can't do this at the same time. Where are you, Amy? Linda, do you want me to?
Do. Hi, I do. Uh-oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have... When you were doing this, did you, Eleanor, what a beautiful story.
There you are. Looking for you.
Did you envision your hands going through the depth of the body, or did you more work on the surface outline, or did you think of it like a 3D where you went? I know you were on the surface, but did you sort of see the depth of the organ too?
That is a great question. In this circumstance, it was pretty emergency. But most of the time when I'm working with the organs, I am allowing myself the gift to receive the information, because the enteric nervous system is so, if I may anthropomorphize for a minute, put human conditions on something that's not, but it is part of our humanity, the way our nervous system, whether it's enteric or central or peripheral, right? So enteric meaning the organs. I listen to what it gives back to me. I allow myself to use Feldenkrais and T-Touch to receive the information of what's going on in there. Rarely am I telling it what to do. If I am in Feldenkrais lifting a leg and I'm telling it, right? I'm like going to make a rope, I'm going to move it around, and I'm going to go into the hip joint, and here I'm going to connect it all the way up through your skeleton. Or in T-Touch, it'll be like, well, we've got the raccoon touch, we've got the python, we've got the coil python for these different circumstances. When it's the organs, I found that by using the raccoon touch, I can listen. And I can receive what it is saying, because so often the gut isn't listened to. Think about, I had a gut instinct, right? I had butterflies in my belly. We need to listen to what's going on in there more than ignoring it. And so I use that as the gestalt therapy through T-Touch, maybe, I don't know, to listen. And on rare occasion, I'll go, let's do this touch to actually do something. So yeah, at that point, I know where the organs are and I can feel what organ is needing that. but mostly you'd be amazed where all the therapy happens in the listening with these touches.
And that is when we connect, when we consciously connect with the phenomenal when I connect with the intelligence of the body, it's one thing. When I go deeper and I think about connecting with the divine spark, that creator in every cell in our body, that takes me to another level. And I just have to be there to give, as you're doing, giving these beautiful listening opportunities to the body to heal itself, because our bodies have this amazing, amazing capacity.
And I think that's what these, and I think, Linda, that's what these tea touches, these different touches do, that we're learning to use ourselves and our hands to listen. And then we use our voice to ask the person, do you like it like this? Do you like it like that? How about this? How about that? To give me a feedback on the feedback scale. But at some point, you start listening with your hands even better than your ears, using these touches.
And Eleanor, that's your gift, but I don't do that.
Yeah, okay.
And
got it.
I mean, that is your really special gift that you have, that is just amazing, absolutely amazing. And the reason that I don't listen for that is because my promise to myself is that I can do things that a three-year-old can do. And the fact is that I can give this information in the touches that the body can accept, and I do it with the feedback from the animal or the person watching. But the animals, they show us. We don't show what we're feeling. We don't dare to, is my experience. I mean, I remember once getting, I wanted to experience shiatsu in Austria. And Annegret asked, and I went to this person who was this guy, supposed to be really good. And he did this thing on my back that was, I mean, using all his weight on these points. Now, I believe that shiatsu can be done in a way that is like Eleanor's describing, that you can make that connection without pressure. That's what I have experienced. And yet, did I say anything to this guy? I just held my breath and waited till he was finished. Today, I would have stopped it in the middle and said, excuse me, but this is not really what I need for my body, and thank you very much. But I find that my tendency used to be, before I learned to take responsibility for myself and know that that's my, I need to be a caregiver for my body. So what you're describing, Eleanor, is beautiful, beautiful listening. And yet you can be very successful with using the different pressures and the tempos. So let's look at it from both points of view.
Yeah.
And see what your role is. Where do you take this work in this beautiful way?
Well, and I appreciate, thank you, really thank you for saying that, because the thing that separates out T-Touch than everything else is that you make it so easy to do. So you, thank you again for saying that. You don't need to be able to listen. That's a different thing, right? But you do, but know these tea touches and know that, and learn. Don't just do it intuitively in the beginning. You want to really learn the layout that Linda has set up, or that we have set up, that this touch tends to be for this, this is for this, this speed, this tempo. Learn those things. And then at some point, the intuition can blend with it too. I mean, would you say that too, Linda, so that they know? Oh, hold on. Oh, your battery. Did you hear me now? Maybe Sandy can say it. Oh, good. She's putting, yeah, batteries. Oh, no, I can't hear you. You have to change your sound thing. Sandy, maybe you come in and say what you know about that.
Yeah, I do both.
Well, of course, because you've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times when you're first learning, that's the whole thing about learning techniques. You learn the specific techniques, and then you try it and explore in different situations and different areas, different circumstances for what you have, and you learn a lot. And once you start, as you start using the different touches, it really does help you connect into your intuitive sense. It's one of the things that's so amazing. Linda, do you need some help?
Yeah. Okay, so Sandy, while you're helping her, I know that Teresa Cottarelli had her hand raised.
Linda, I'm trying
to get on.
We can hear you now.
Oh, good. Okay. My AirPods ran out of juice.
Okay. Thank goodness, that's all that ran out of juice. Okay. I know Teresa Cottarelli had her hand raised, if you want to.
Yes, if I can share a little story. I just had a few nights ago, my husband had thrombosis on the retina and in his eye, and he had to have an injection in his eye to solve this thrombosis. And the side effect of this injection is that he had some, how do you say, coagulo? So it hurt him tremendously in his eye. He almost turned crazy. And so I put some artificial, drops in his eye. And I started to make the raccoon touch beginning on around the eye, but I saw that my hand was very big for him to have it in front. So I took a Q-tips for ears, and I did like for a baby, first in the circle way, and then in zigzag on his eye, 20 minutes and he's gone. And you know, Linda, how he was skeptical, my husband. It's 25 years of T-touch, and he said, do it again. And really, I saw him, he really turned, you know, when you would like to take out your eye, it was so, yeah. It's not a pain, it's just disturbing you. And 20 minutes. And I thought that the lady, one of the Tuesday nights, she said something about macula, I believe. And she said that she did also in up and down. And I thought, try it. And I was really thankful that we could resolve the problem. That was beautiful. I wanted to share.
Yes, and that was Joyce Anderson. But it is, that's a miracle that Umberto is now asking for T-touch.
Really, yeah.
Thank you.
He asked me even.
Thank you. So Sandy, I think this is a good time, isn't it, for a 10-minute break?
Yes. So this is 1 o'clock is the time that, at least Pacific time, is the time that we were supposed to end the 3 hours. And I know a bunch of people are hopping off. So let us know what you'd like to do. Are we going to just go into the after class?
What I would like, that we have 58 people still on. I would really like to take 10 minutes and come back and share this piece that you have with fear, because it's so important to what we're dealing with now. And the way that you dealt that and the lesson that you have for us in that, right. I think it's really important.
Okie doke. And so I'll end this third well, it's actually our second recording, but it's our third hour. Well, the time is now confusing me, but I'm ending this recording.